Donnie Brastocks, good morning.
Blessed be, my brother. How do you do?
Blessed be. Blessed be. How you doing?
This is the Dr. Agriculture, and I just...
Yes, sir.
You're back on the island?
I am not back on the island yet, sir.
Oh, but you sound clear and good. I thought it was in the beautiful...
But that is good. The technology working.
The technology working, boy. Let me tell you something.
I am told that these days I am what is considered a digital nomad. So I work in one vineyard and live in another vineyard. That's how it works.
You are 100% Bajan. For God
indeed.
So loved this world. For God so
150%.
Right. For God so... I know you're not a biblical man, but you know I am not a regular call anymore, Peter, as you would know. But being that I love Mia Motley so much, I love Barbados Labour Party so much, I love Barbados so much, I think that I had to make a contribution today. This may be my last for the year, God's willing, but only God will know that. But for God so loved this world that he sent his only son, that whosoever believes in him will not perish, but have everlasting life. As I said before, you are not a biblical man. You make that abundantly clear when you sit as moderator. But the reason why I say that anybody that come on this earth and try to play Jesus Christ will die. And you, if you understand what I'm saying, because if God sent his own son to save all of our Malthusians and all our disgusted people, and he great treat so, Peter, anybody that walk the face of this earth and try to be Jesus Christ, they're going to end up dead. You understand? You take anything for what I'm trying to say there?
Kind of.
God, look how they treat Jesus Christ. Put him on the cross, the nailed things through his hand, the beatty, the put thorns on his head, and he come to save all of us. Well, that is not my contribution, but I just saying the reason why I quote that.
I thought you calling to talk to me about ganja.
Well, you know that I is a man that is big in agriculture. But before I go there, Peter...
You never grown a ganja, though.
Peter, don't send the police at my place. I know that I don't have...
No, but I just ask a question. All you got to do is say no.
Hold on. Growing ganja is illegal, Peter, number one. Right or wrong?
But that ever stopped a boy from doing it? They got banned for selling it?
I am not.
But just make it clear that you are not that person.
Well, I am going to make it clear for you and everybody...
Let me ask you a question, Mr. Agriculture. If ganja was decriminalized and you were able to grow quantities that you could sell, you know, for thing, and you could do it legally, would you be willing to get into that crop, or would you stick to your yams and edibles and so on and dashi?
I'd be the first body to plant some, because I'm a man who knows about cloning. I know about grafting. I know about seed production. Don't mind people that start with a feeling talking about the Dr. Agriculture. But I'm a man who have eaten, live, and sleep agriculture, and I don't worry about what nobody has to say, because I know what I can do. I know where my qualifications lie. And not only that, I have been in the soil. I have done a lot of research, and I have done a lot of things and proof to people that I can produce, and not only produce, I deal with quality and quantity. And everybody,
so you feel you could produce a good quality ganja?
I believe that I will be able to produce the best ganja available, and when the THC is taken from it, I know that I'll be able to got an empire. I got a swimming pool and a jacuzzi. I wanted to be from this nation here, Peter. Let me tell you. Peter, let me tell you something. If you were a batsman, listen to me carefully. You know I'm not a regular man, so I'm begging you and the telephonist and the producers just to give me a little hearing today. If you were a batsman, Barbados would be like Trinidad today with 13 straight. The way how you batting today upon this program, we would not have lost a match in this last 2020 cricket that now displayed. The reason why I'm saying to you is, I love Mayor Amoor Motley with all my heart. Listen to me careful, and I want Barbados to listen to what agriculture is saying to them. Mayor Amoor Motley is a wonderful woman. Peter, I know her personally. I have spoken to her. I don't want to confuse her now, because she got a big country to run. It's COVID environment. She's very busy, and I have to give her 150,000,000% for the job she has done so far as Prime Minister. The former administration, as you know, they didn't buy a stuff truck, Peter. They didn't buy a bus. They hardly do anything for Barbadians. And I find it so sad that the Democratic stalwarts are still coming to try to put in John public mind that the Barbados Labour Party is the worst government of the day. And I know that you know, and I know, and other people know, that they have wasted 8 good years. Because after the God gave him his due, the Honourable David Thompson passed, he wasn't able to do much as a Prime Minister. And I know if you personally preferred Thompson than the 8-year Prime Minister, which was short, right or wrong, because I don't like to tell you it's going to
work. But that's a secret, of course.
Right. No, I just like to make sure that when I speak to John public, I am speaking with clarity. Now, let me tell you something. Anybody that I hear in this little country got anything negative or nasty to say about the Honourable Prime Minister that is present, they got to deal with me personally, agriculture. You know why? That woman is a woman who loves poor people, who cares about country. She ain't there to grabble up the money. She ain't there to unfree nobody. She ain't there to push nobody in the corner. But at the end of the day, Peter, she is one person, and she can only do so much. Peter, that to you personally as a political analyst, that woman ain't do a good job so far. Huh?
But I think it's obvious from what I'm saying that that's my view.
Yeah, but why you got...
Mr. Agriculture, I follow politics all over the Caribbean. You struggle to find a government anywhere in the Caribbean that has been as active as this government has in the 2 years that has been in office. You struggle. Right. And based on what she's saying in the throne speech in terms of the remainder of the term, they're gonna work equally as hard in that next term. So exactly. I don't believe that we can say that anybody's falling asleep on the job. So that's fine.
Peter, I'm going to ask you a question. I'm not being facetious because I'm a real man. I don't worry about people because they victimized me in this country already. And tell themselves that I would have buckled under pressure and I would be somewhere beyond where I am now. But thank God that I am still strong. I am still holding firm. Yes, I had my little setbacks. I had people trying the best to bury me. But I'm still here strong. I'm in good health. But I want to ask you a question. I want to be honest with you. In a COVID environment, do you think that the former Prime Minister would have got Barbados in where it is right now? I believe a third or a quarter of the Barbados would have gone along off of the face of the earth. You want to agree with me?
I don't know. I wouldn't like to say that. What I suggest is that he would have allowed the ministers to lead the battle. He would not have been in the forefront of the battle. He would have allowed his ministers to take front. That was his style.
Yeah, but you know.
Anyhow, but suffice to say, Mr. Agriculture, I think we can all say that it's a good thing that we have a current leader in place for this time. And I think that's probably the best way to leave it. All right, sir.
You are totally right. All right, Peter.
But let me move on, Mr. Agriculture. Let me move on. All right, because we got a lot of people calling this morning. Thanks a lot for calling. All right, this is Down to Brass Tacks. Good morning.
Yes, good morning. How are you doing?
Good morning, sir. How are you doing?
Yeah, fine. Oh, I'm going to be fairly quickly here today. Let me first say that Mr. Adderley is a political flyweight. Okay? Mr. Adderley competed in 5 elections, general elections. He won 3 and lost 2. He was in political wilderness from 2008 to 2013. Came back on Ms. Myers, on the Prime Minister long coattail when he went overwhelmingly by 2,244 votes. The 3 times he won in BLP swing. He went in BLP swing, right? In 1999, he won by 640 votes. And he scrambled in 2003, he got 177 votes. As I said, he was in political wilderness, and then he came back on in this year. Now, why really want to talk about, he's the political heavyweight. What I want to talk about is 2 Sundays ago on Brass Tacks Sunday, when he appeared. It seemed to me like a diversion from the normal Sunday Brass Tacks programs. First of all, they had about 4 calls, no, 5 calls at about 2 minutes per piece. I mean, 2 minutes per call. That's about 10 minutes. I had 4 sponsorship ads, about 4 minutes. Then the news was about 5 minutes. So in all, I had about 19 minutes, right? Now, that would leave off the program is 2.25 hours, 135 minutes. When you take away the 19 minutes, Mr. Adley had 116 minutes to be on a soapbox. And all he did in that period of time, he implicated himself. And he showed clearly that he's upset. I think he shot himself in the foot. And if you look, all his quarrel and his arguments and all he's saying came after he was not made a cabinet minister. When the cabinet was announced, a couple of days later, he went and sworn in as the opposition leader. Now, Mr. Glenn Murray, right? When Ms. Motley was the opposition leader, he criticized her. She's now the prime minister. He continues to criticize her. Now, you got Mr. Motley. Strange enough, Mr. Adley was in his program, and he was leading Mr. Adley. But when you go in the court, how your lawyers give you leading questions. If you look at all of the instances when Mr. Ali spoke, at least reacted, it was after he did not get a cabinet pick. He even said that much when he was on the calling program. He said, you named 26 ministers and Joseph Ali is not one of those ministers. You know, he contradicted himself. The whole thing. Now, when he got sworn in, as opposition leader, okay, he said at that said swearing ceremony, he told the press that he even got it in his mind, in his thought, to form a political party. Will you believe he changed his mind? You know what? The clerk of parliament came out and said Mr. Adley is not receiving the $150,000 subvention because he does not have a political party. Quickly thereafter, Mr. Ali went to form a party. Mm-hmm. Mr. Ali can't come and tell anybody that he wasn't upset he didn't get a cabinet pick and he caused a fall for democracy. He also said the government did not say that they were going to the IMF. Said Mr. Adley is misinformed. In the last manifesto, when they said is the top frequent question asked, they said at the number 7 that they will go to the IMF. Mm. That they will go to the IMF is in the BAP manifesto. So Mr. Adley,
Sassman, let me just say, because we're gonna have to go to commercial. Yes, but just say in response that I support what you said. The thing that struck me about Mr. Adley is that Mr. Adley said when he went over the other side. He said, if I can't make a first 11, that's fine. But if I can't make a second 11, I could as well go and sit on the other side. Your point about the fact that he came in on a mere Motley coattail is entirely statistically proven. He succeeded. He failed to gain a seat twice under Owen Arthur. He succeeded under Mia Motley, and the thanks he gave Mia Motley was to cross the floor immediately and go and serve on the other side. I had difficulties with the fact that when he was on the radio, he was not challenged about the fact that he openly said, I did not expect to be in a cabinet. But notwithstanding that fact, when he was not included in the cabinet, he left and he went on the other side. The logic of it loses me. And then we have the fact that, as you quite rightly said he wasn't interested in forming a political party. And then all of a sudden, he formed his political party. And was quite angry when he was told that the political party had not been formed in a way that would have allowed him to benefit from the subvention because 2 or more persons had not been ministers in a previous administration. So this is the kind of conversation that I have a lot of time for. You know what? I think that the public of Barbados knows why Mr. Adley is where he is. level of deception involved. And what I would say is that if Mr. Adeli believes that he has a position that can be carried, what Mr. Adeli needs to do is to resign Parliament. And if he's right, he will win back his seat on his own strength. He's not going to do it because I think that he knows as well as I do that the moment that Parliament is dissolved, his political career is over. It's as simple as that. And the Caswell Franklins of this world and the senator this and that and all of the people that he has associated with him know, none of them know that they can't win a seat either. So Caswell could talk. Caswell is my friend. Caswell could talk, he blew in the face. Because in the final analysis, Caswell's relevance as a politician comes to an end. And the moment that Parliament is dissolved, while you have other people in and around, whose careers and so on have been parliamentary, and certainly we see them in that regard. So I'm not too worried. He will be taken care of in due course. And I want to thank you, Mr. Stassman, for calling and helping to make the program interesting as always. Down to brass tacks, 4341790. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Wickham. How are you this morning?
Man, I'm good, sir. Yourself?
I'm fine. I listened to the program and I listened to everybody that was calling, but I will start by saying this. I am very enlightened and feel very glad this morning after hearing this strong speech yesterday. And I would have said before that it is time that the people of Barbados look at the situation now, not only of Barbados, but the world. And if they look at it carefully, they will see now that things are changing so much so that in this would be the first time in my life, in the political history of this country, that I can say that the people of Barbados is involved in the way of running the country. Because when I listened to the train speech yesterday, I would have heard a number of things that would have been put before me and other people before the election and during the campaign. So I compliment the Barbados Labour Party, the government, and the Prime Minister for taking that stance. Because I am sure that people can say when you look at the things that the changes and so that are coming, that they would have actually made some of the recommendations during the campaign in the last election, and therefore they come to fruition today. Now, I would have heard Tallboy calling and he made reference to the leadership of the former party. But this is what I will say today now after hearing the strong speech yesterday. My problem is this. When I look at what has happened since 2018, because COVID was not part of the plan of this government or any part in the West Indies or the world for that matter to be included in what is happening. And I am saying based on the problem that this people making reference about the last decade when that statement is made, I sit back and wonder what would have happened if that same party were in government after the 24th of May 2018. Because if the country would have deteriorated the way it was, and they don't have answers, and they don't even have answers now for their own self, I am wondering what Barbados would be like. And all I would say is that one of the most things that enlighten me is that I will pray to God that I will live to see that day when this country become a republic, because that was part of my ego before, to see this country fall from under our colonial slave masters. And I would like to see the day when that Republic Day comes. Well, it is true. It, for me, it won't be like 1966. Because in 1966, I was on the parade at the garrison when it became independent. But I will pray to God that I will see the day when we become a republic and we have our own head of state. Thank you, Mr. Wickham.
Sir, don't go. I want to ask you a couple of things. You're gone. Sorry. No, the reason I wanted to ask the gentleman how old he was, not because I was malicious, but he said he was there on the parade square in 1966, which means he has to be older than me. Because I was in 1966, I was not even conceived of yet, having been born in 1968. The gentleman sounded like an elder gentleman to me, which means that he would have been in the 60-plus vicinity, and I suspect he's about there. And my research has suggested that that is the generation that is perhaps less excited about this idea of becoming a republic. So I was anxious to engage him on the fact that he represents somewhat of an anomaly in the sense that he is of the generation that is not excited by this change, but nonetheless, he is excited by this change. And I thought that that was a fairly important point that he was making. Certainly the research, when I would have done it, would have suggested that the persons that were more into the idea of changing to a republic were the younger persons that were more educated. I didn't get any gender difference between males and females, but certainly those were the two indicators that I had seen: education level, income level, and then also age. So it's good to see that certainly from the age perspective, this gentleman does not check that box, but nonetheless supports the idea. Good morning, Peter. A New Testament story where the meek Savior tells of how a man with many talents is rewarded twofold, while a man with one talent is threatened to have his one talent taken up and given unto the man. That is truly a story of corruption. Here in Barbados, we put high flyers on a pedestal and give them scholarship money, while the slow learners get marginalized. We must, as a society, be careful about what guides us and guides our policy. We are treading dangerous ground by holding on to morals that discriminate and punish certain people. Well said, WhatsApper. I could not agree with you more. We take people who have done well in the system. We reward them highly. We give them scholarships. We give them all the assistance. The other ones are left to struggle, and then when they fail, we lock them up, and that is our way of dealing with it. We need to do better as a society. Down the brass tacks, good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Wickman. Everybody can hear my voice.
Morning, sir. How are you doing?
I'm making it. Well, I know you are making it, so you don't waste your time asking that, because I keep hearing it, right?
Now, you're making it?
I am making it, but I will
you're not making it, you, right?
I will not ask you how you are doing, because I can hear all the time how you are doing.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, good. Now, listen, I want to start by saying this. I do believe in mine, Mayor Motley, Prime Minister, do care. I believe in mine, the government trying its best in circumstances. However, people must realize actions speak louder than words, as it's been proven. Now, I want to ask the Prime Minister, because I can't go any lower than this, why is it that the government of Barbados have opened back up Barbados, but yet, as caring, there are certain individuals in this land that depends on persons sending things for them from the outside of Barbados? And I'm speaking about the Port Authority.
Yet, so you're not getting things?
No, let me finish. If you would understand, if you listen.
Yet,
Barbados have been open back up, whereas you can have persons coming into Barbados, which is more frequent, more dangerous, at the airport or sea of entries, whatever you may see. And now, at the port, which is the Bridgetown port, where the persons who are less likely to, which is less persons, as I can gather and understand, is that they have persons, as they say, sending things for them to assist them at this crisis time, when a lot of them cannot do no better for themselves, yet the government is still trying to help. But these persons cannot go down there, enter the port, and clear what is for them, because they must use the persons who would have been the drivers or the brokers of these same simple things that are coming for them to get mostly something to assist these most vulnerable and poor people. But yet you cannot go to the port to claim your own stuff. You must use a broker, which means it entails more money. The reason why persons normally send a barge is because they're trying to cut out all those fees and money that they don't have. to get what they want or what was sent for them. Now we have the drivers. I have no problem with what the drivers want to do. Understand that anybody here in the city would understand what I'm saying. You would have gone down there and defeated the purpose or cut out the expense for you for having to pay a broker. You go, the assessment was made, whatever, you can defend yourself of whatever you get or you can't. Whatever happens there, the custom officer have the right to do what they want to do when they see what you have. Now you have to pay the drivers a broker's fee. Which means because you can't go yourself, you must pay this broker's fee. Whatever they charge, all don't charge the same. I have no quarrel if they're making money for themselves. However, you must remember, if the persons had the money out here, first of all, when the items come for them, they would appear the broker at the place wanting and done. So in other words, I think that this, and I want to know why they pour in the bucket to individuals. Because I believe in mind it will help the economy. There's a suggestion. People somewhere have to catch the bus. They have to catch a taxi to get to the port. Understand me? Then they have to actually, they may be hungry. They may buy something on the way down, up, waiting, whatever. In other words, it stimulates the economy somehow. Yeah, we got new buses. People need to ride on it. I mean, I just saying this as simple things. Like, I don't know why, if there's something else that we need to know, I would like the relevant authority, because you may not hear persons calling and speaking about it. It's a real serious grumble out there. If it is they're having a problem with too many people coming wanting my report, they can do the outreach by order. Or they can say 50 people per day, 10 per day, whatever. But I know it cannot be COVID because we got a big airport that everybody can run up and down. We have supermarkets. Where is that?
I got you.
Supermarket. More people go into the
supermarket. Let me ask you a question, sir. What is the brokerage fee associated with a barrel?
It all depends on which broker you use. That's what I'm trying to say to you. If you use the one,
just roughly.
Over 2-3. It all depends on what you bring or what is.
I know about what
amount of items. Mm-hmm. But if you're going now, you have now the persons who you was trying to defeat that person with the actual place.
I understand the argument, sir, but I'm right. Just trying to understand in terms of the cost, if you can help me, give me a basic idea of what the brokerage fee is.
But I won't be able to do that because I say it depends on what you bring, how many bars come for you. You may not even know somebody sending
a bar. Let me put it this way. If the person overseas said, I can send you the money through Western Union, would you have to pay a fee?
You're looking at cost. You forget what.
No, but I'm just asking you, sir, a question.
Listen, sir,
hold on a second. I listened to you for the better part of 5 minutes. I'm asking you a question. If the person decided, I'm not going to send the barrel, I'm going to send the money, would you have to pay a fee to Western Union to receive the money?
Yes.
Thank you. Okay. So the point I'm making to you, sir, is that I think in light of the current circumstances, which I suspect are related to COVID, and related to the fact that we are trying to reduce the numbers of people who are going into the port and doing business, the decision has been taken to go with the brokers, right? Now, I am saying that when someone sends a parcel for you, they're sending you sometimes $1,000, sometimes $2,000 worth of product, which you can get out of those barrels. And you're getting that for free. What you're being told is that a broker has to be involved in the process of clearing those barrels for all kinds of reasons. And you have to pay that broker a fee. So I am saying, if you are not quarreling with Western Union for taking a percentage of the money that has been sent when you receive it in cash, why are you quarreling with the fact that you have to pay a broker a fee?
No, you're missing the point.
I'm not missing the point.
Sorry, no, I didn't want to go that road. I can tell what the point is exactly, right? Persons who are unable to assist themselves and have money readily on their hand to pay out are forced to do it. That is the point. And yes, I said in the beginning, I believe the government do care, but they must analyze it and see the person do not really have the money on their hand to pay out. And not only that, we must also remember, when you go to the supermarket and some person is assisting you, that is nothing coming from you. If some person assisting you with whatever capital, you want to say $1,000, $2,000, some person is assisting you with that. So basically, you are getting something, a help.
Right. And that's the same. And sir, that's the same point I made to you when Western Union sends you your money. When that person overseas sends you $100, $200, $300 to help you along the way, it's nothing that's coming out locally. It's money that comes in. But in order to uplift that money, you have to pay a fee, a transaction fee. And I'm saying to you, sir, that I think there can be certainly some conversation held with the amount of money that brokers charge. My understanding, certainly, was that the brokerage fees associated with the traditional barrel are certainly a lot less than the numbers that you gave. But then maybe my information is out today. But my understanding is that brokerage fees associated with barrels can sometimes be as low as $100. Okay? And I'm saying that if you consider the fact that when you get a barrel, you can get a substantial amount of stuff inside that barrel with a considerably higher value. The brokerage fee that you're paying is probably a small portion. And in addition to that, there are several brokers who will also offer you a delivery, which means instead of having to pay the taxi to come and go, you basically get a delivery fee rolled into that. So, sir, if you would just listen to me for a minute, I'm going to give you the final word.
I understand.
I'm saying instead of us coming to a position that we should let everyone crowd on going to the port to collect barrels and create a health-related problem, if that is the problem, then appreciate the fact that ultimately you're not paying anything for it. You're getting something, and there are fees associated with those kinds of transactions. And I am not opposed to the idea of looking at some kind of barrier on fees going past a certain thing, but I see you got to be reasonable. You can't compare it to the airport. When a person comes through the airport, you pay a fee, right? You pay a fee. When I passed through the airport last time, that was the first time in my life I've actually, well, since the old days, I've actually paid a departure tax in cash, where I had to actually pay out. And see how much? It was over $200 I paid for departure tax. It's a lot of money. So I'm saying that when you are using the facilities of the port, and you're paying port charges and brokerage fees, I mean, Kadir. Anyhow, final word from you, then we're going to go to the next call.
Yes. Okay, listen. All you get mixed up with the part with the amount of money to pay at the airport. I'm saying, why is it that persons can frequent the airport and the supermarket more regularly, where we do have more than persons that will go into the port? So that means to me, it can't be nothing but COVID. We have internal thing already that we don't know nothing about that's happening in the port that nobody can go into the port. What's really it is? So when you say that you believe it is this and that, that's what I'm calling to ask. Could I really hear from the relative person what is the reason? Because if you can go to the airport, more people go to the airport and more people mingle in the supermarket than will go into the port in one day. That's all I'm saying. And then
okay, sir. Yeah. All right, sir. Thanks a lot for calling. Good chatting with you. Down to brass tacks. There are two comments here. One is saying that apparently when you don't pay Western Union to collect, the person that sends you pays for the service from that end. My argument is that if you pay for the service or I pay for the service, somebody pays for the service. So my argument is not lost. And then I have another person, Leroy, who is writing me, telling me the same thing, that because the person pays for the other end, the person who receives it doesn't pay. The reality of the situation, however, is that somebody pays. And this is the problem where we have the port. The airport example I was using, somebody has to pay for it. I pay, whether I know or not, I pay. If somebody sends me a ticket, they pay. But ultimately, the service is paid for. So when we're talking about the port, we need to find a way in which the fee that is assessed has to be able to be paid by someone. And I am trying to understand what is the difficulty regarding the fact that if you're using the facilities of the port to clear through a barrel, then somebody ought to pay for it. And it seems as though the easiest way to have it done is to be done through a broker who can arrange in terms of the fees and the necessary transportation. Down to brass tacks, good morning. Good morning and welcome. You're down to brass tacks. Good morning and welcome. Down to brass tacks. How are you doing?
Top of the day to you.
Yes, good, sir. Hey, how is it going?
Everything is going fine with me so far.
Mm-hmm.
If you're last caller, I think both of you made mistakes during the call, if I may say so. The caller made mistakes by suggesting that Barbados as a country reopened, and he said that twice, but I would like to inform him that Barbados as a country never closed its borders during COVID-19. As for you now, you have given an impression during the call that if someone sent someone else a barrel, the person who the barrel belongs to doesn't have to go to the port at all, only the broker. Is that true?
Sir, I don't know. I don't know. You finish the point you're making.
So why did you mislead the person or the rest of us by suggesting that only the broker goes to the port?
Maybe I had a moment of insanity.
Okay, fair enough.
Can you clarify the matter?
It might not have been your first time, but don't worry about it.
I know. It's happened to me all the time. It's happened to you too. But I think it's happened to you more regularly than it's happened to me.
Yes, sure.
Right, yeah. That's how it's going.
I just want to, if I may, just comment on the on what is called the Queen's speech yesterday and say that I thought most of it was in order. I note there was one part of it where it was said that we do not want to discriminate against people who have partners of equal sex. I don't have a problem with that myself, because that has been going on in Barbados for years, even before I was born. The bit that tickled me a bit, though, and it's probably coming from the Barbados Labour Party's manifesto, is that a day will come when people will have the chance to have a referendum to suggest whether we should vote for marriage of same-sex people. And I hope that Barbadians will never, ever give that recommendation to any government, because it is wrong in God's law for people of the same sex to be married. And therefore, I don't mind if you go somewhere else and get married, because when you come back to Barbados, we don't have to recognize you as a married person if you're married to the same sex. But this business about same-sex marriage, I think, I don't care who gets involved in it, it is wrong in the sight of God.
Right. Reverend, stick a pin there, and let me engage you on this issue for...
I will stick a pin.
Let me engage you on this issue for a brief moment, because you, in all of these conversations, I have not had the opportunity to engage a rational, believing person like yourself on this issue thus far. It seems as though most of such persons prefer to speak to either Dennis or David, but not to me. You said that you think it is wrong in God's sight, and I would say to you that I don't really care, quite frankly, because I don't believe in God. If it is that I do not care what you think in terms of God's sight, or alternatively, I don't agree with you that is wrong in God's sight, if I took either of those positions, what would be your response to me about my ability to gain a marriage in the context of a situation where I am requesting the union be recognized by the state? And I'm not really asking for God to recognize it. I'm not asking for the church to recognize it. I'm asking for the state to recognize it. And I don't believe in God, so it doesn't really matter. What would you say to that?
Well, I happen to hold the view, and it so happens quite a number of people do. In fact, I would go so far to say a majority of people do, that there is a God, and that God is bigger than the state. So therefore, we take what we say from reading the Bible and trying to understand it, because some of it is conflicting. But the point is this. We hold the view that the only people who can get married are those from different sex. That is what we believe. Now, so I am not too concerned what you believe. That is your problem. But I and many people in this country hold the view that the Bible speaks of a union between a man and a woman. That's what it speaks of. And I believe in that.
Now, right, but Reverend, I am not, Reverend, I am not trying to argue with you on it, because okay. I am not going to deny the fact that that's what the Bible says. The Bible is clear on that point. It's clear in the Old Testament, and it's clear in the New Testament. The point is that what I'm saying to you is that I don't care, and I don't understand why it is that when we are having an argument about whether the state recognizes the union of two people, you have to tell me that the basis is rejectable because it is not approved of as the Bible. And I'm saying that there is a clear distinction between church and state, right? A clear distinction. When you get married, no, hold on a second, Reverend. When you get married and you are a marriage officer, when you perform the marriage ceremony, you obtain a document from the state that is signed in the presence of the other two individuals, and that essentially refers to a marriage. The religious part that you do is outside of that. But if I were to decide I don't want to get involved in that process, I want to do something differently, then I am no less married than the person who goes to the church and who agrees to go through your process. So I'm saying that when you say to me that God doesn't approve and the Bible doesn't approve, that's fine. I don't have a difficulty with that. And I'm saying that I don't think the day will ever come in Barbados that someone should put a gun to the head of any pastor or priest and say, you have to perform a same-sex marriage. That's wrong. Because you have the right to marry whomsoever you feel is deserving of marriage. That's a different conversation to the one that says, in the case of Barbados, should a person who is of the same sex that feels that they want to identify with the other person not be entitled to a marriage? That has absolutely nothing to do with the church. And in all of this, I'm trying to understand, why is it that the church's view is so important? Reverend, I am married. I am happily married, okay? According to the laws of France, okay? I have never been anywhere near a church. There was nobody other. When we got married, there were 50 or so friends, and there was a marriage officer who was a mayor, a deputy mayor, and the two of us and family and so on. There had nobody in there representing no church. And I'm saying that, why is it that when we have this conversation, the church has to be up front and center as though someone is asking the church for anything by asking the church for nothing? Because Barbados is a secular state. And I have made a point before, and I would ask you now to respond to this. The church, well, the Bible seems to have a comfort with polygamy. The Bible also seems to have a comfort with child marriage. The state of Barbados does not. Why is it that we are having, yes, Dennis, don't furl your eyebrows, the state of Barbados does not has a problem with child marriage. While, as I understand it, the biblical principles is that normally a person can get married from the time the person starts to menstruate and so on, which is usually like 12 or 13 years old. We say that you can't get married until you're 21, right? You can have sex at 16, but you can't get married at 21. Apparently you get married at 18, sorry. Right? Dennis is correcting me, it's 18. So the point I'm making is that there clearly is a significant distance between what the state acknowledges as marriage and what the church acknowledges as marriage. Why is it that you're saying to me in this particular instance, the view of the church, clear as it is more relevant? Help me, Reverend.
The thing is this here. Usually we are guided by two things in our country, our constitution and the Bible. I don't know which one comes first, and I'm not even prepared to discuss which one comes first. But neither allows for same-sex marriage. And you're quite right that you're married in France. We in Barbados don't recognize you. It is that simple.
Actually, that's not necessarily true, eh? That's not necessarily true.
I'm speaking about our government cannot recognize you.
Okay, Reverend, yes. Let me ask you this question then. If you were going to say that my marriage is not recognized in Barbados, can I go into the marriage office in Barbados and apply for a marriage certificate to marry a woman?
I guess you can. But I don't know if you can in your
presence. No. Tell me. Either you're recognizing it or you're not recognizing it. Because they got a woman in Barbados that want to marry me all now, and she here telling me so online. Can I go...
Is she sane in her head? Is she sane?
She's very sane. She's extremely sane. Okay, and she has been proposing marriage. So my question is, if I want to double dip in the sense that I want to have a husband and a wife, can I come to Barbados and get married tomorrow? If I cannot, it clearly means that the state does recognize my marriage. And if I can, it means that the state doesn't.
In the interest of time, there's one little matter I would like to discuss with you, if you don't mind.
And that sure, go right ahead.
Yeah, the matter that you had with the stats man earlier about Reverend, well, not Reverend, Bishop Atherley. Now,
Reverend Gibbs, we talking about marriage today. I didn't realize we going on about that. I'm trying to get some clarity on this marriage thing.
I thought we had exhausted the subject of marriage. That's why.
We ain't exhausted because you ain't telling me whether I could get married or not. My Reverend, I'm sorry that we're going to have to go. We have to go to the regional roundup. I would love to engage you on this issue some more and to also go to the one that starts, man. But we're going to have to do it another time. Thanks a lot for calling.